Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have an exciting guest all the way from Vancouver. Yes, I'm in person with her now at the Central Cafe in Toronto, who makes really good tea, I'm told. Jennifer Nicole Stang, that's your internet movie database. That's what she wants. She's the writer director of this fabulous short film, The Whistler, which will soon be available on VOD. Please check it out. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, you're here in Toronto at an independent filmmakers thing. I mean, it is for women only. And I know that's a tough thing, I think, with the Me Too movement and that. How does it feel being a woman? Like, I think your film is strong enough to be in any film festival. Do you like being identified as a woman filmmaker?
You know, I think it's wonderful that women are having more opportunities. And, you know, there's more focus on what women are doing right now and what their perspectives are. That's why I think the Female Eye Film Festival is so great, because you can focus on, you know, how women think and how they perceive different things, even visually. So it's really fascinating. However, I don't like to be identified as a female, because I like to focus on, you know, if the story is great, I don't care if it's, you know, done by male or female. You know, I think it's great to look at things. I don't think that matters, you know. So
I have to agree with you. Now, I also want to go into your topic of, you went to a VOD format, and I want to know how shopping for a certain format, what works for you?
I think a lot of research is definitely important when kind of finding the right fit for you in terms of the VOD platform. You know, once the film festival circuit, you're kind of finished, it's great to look for, you know, more exposure for your film. And we have signed with a VOD platform that we think is a great fit, and we're really excited about it. We can't reveal it just yet, but we certainly will in time, hopefully soon. And we've talked to a number of different VOD platforms from the UK, Japan, other parts of the world, and there's just a lot of options out there. But it's really important to look through all the contracts, to go through everything, because you want to find the best fit for you. So that's really important.
I guess we should finally get in the film. We've discussed the VOD making. We've discussed all behind the scenes. I want to discuss basically your production values right off the top. You have one of the strongest production values, from set design to music to cinematography, I've seen in a short film in a long time. This film looks like it has a solid budget. You may not have, but if you didn't, I'm very, very impressed with what you've showed us.
Thank you very much. It's a big, big compliment. I think there were, in terms of the production value, I really wanted it to look, you know, polished. And I think there were areas where my producer, Sasha Filipovic, she had to cut in other areas so we could use nicer lenses, you know. And I think that's something I really wanted for this production, to say, hey, you know, let's make it look as good as we can on a low budget. And so we just interviewed a lot of different people. We took our time finding the right people for this production, and that were on the same page as us creatively. And so we got together a really great team. We were really lucky to find so many talented people that were, you know, available and willing to do something so low budget.
Let's start right at the beginning. I think your main character is the most important thing, and even her sister, I think, is very important. And we are going to get to the end, but we'll get there later. And I also want to discuss how I really enjoyed the parents. They seemed real to me. They didn't seem like actors. They seemed like parents I had, you had, and basic people. And I love the dad saying, I love you, I'm going out, you're going to have to stay at home. And was that something you were looking for when you made the film, to make it like it felt real to me? Not like a film, like something I would see if I was just peering in through the window.
Yeah, I think that's another great compliment. I think I did want to have that feeling of, you know, naturalness, certainly between, and feel that this is kind of a little window into this person's life. And that's tricky in a short film, because you only have so much time. So thank you for that. That's a compliment. You know, we're lucky to get really great actors and talk about it. And we had a reading beforehand, and we were able to discuss, you know, what we wanted this to be. And in fact, I said to John Emmett Tracy, who played the father, I said, why don't you just improv this and see how it feels? And he didn't improv too much of the, you know, the actual lines, but he did different things. He brought the coat out to his wife. He's like, oh, I want to, he was really, you know, classy. He was like, oh, I want Allison to be featured here, who's the actress who plays the mother, Allison Wanzura. And, you know, he featured her, so he came in a little later. So it was just, they added a lot to the scene themselves that I didn't do. They just came and tried different things, which was great.
And I also think you really added that when you do the text scene with her friend Kara. And like I said, I really like the authenticity of this film. I mean, a lot of times you see in film, you're like, okay, it's film land. I got to let that go for plot. But, I mean, obviously something's going on with Kara, which I was a little upset you didn't come back to touch on. And maybe that's a time thing, because I thought Kara was going to show up at some point, because I really felt that was going. But I like the way you work the sister. I like the guinea pig angle. Like, again, being a parent and being home with my kids, and I would have to deal with these things as a parent. So when my parent got there, I could see my older daughter dealing with exactly these things. So I'm going to have to ask, where does this come from? If you don't have kids, where did you get this idea for all this stuff?
You know, I think being a teenager is a really tough time. So I think, you know, a lot of what I tried to integrate into, you know, the character and the dialogue and, you know, is something that a lot of teenagers deal with. They're struggling for their freedom from their parents, and she's thinking about sex and should she, you know, should she date this boy or not, and doesn't want her parents to find out. And, you know, it's something going through her mind, and I think the theme of The Whistler is purity versus sin, you know, sinfulness. And that's something she's struggling with in our sort of ideology as we have it now. So that was something, and, you know, it kind of comes to a point at the end where we kind of find out if she's really pure or not. And so, yeah, it's about the fear of being one or the other, I think.
As you go on, I do want to discuss the guinea pig. I really think that's a MacGuffin. Because you kind of convinced me that the guinea pig is MacGuffin at one point, but then you changed it at the end. But I presume that was coming. Now, whose guinea pig was it? Or did you have to borrow one? Or did you have one lying around?
Well, actually, so these particular creatures are called fancy rats.
Okay, I apologize.
No, it's fine, but they're called fancy rats. Like, that's their actual name for these little creatures. And we were looking for a rat. I mean, because the Whistler is based on the Pied Piper, I kind of wanted to throw that in as an ode to the Pied Piper, in a way. So we actually asked around, I think through Facebook. Sasha was able to find someone we knew that knew a couple that had a pet rat, and we went to talk to them, and they were really open to having the rat on set without an animal trainer, because we couldn't afford that. There was no way. And he said, is this okay? You know, you'd be there. Kind of, they were the wranglers, actually. And there wasn't much for the rat to do. We did make, like, a little... we did give him special treatment. His name was Copernicus. He's now passed on since, which is sad. We made him a little director's chair and had cashews for him on set.
Oh,
so
we
just
true.
Kind of made it fun. And he was really great when you were... He was searching and kind of exploring, but once he knew a place, he kind of just sat there. So we really had to, you know, use some cashews and some different pieces of food to make him run across the hallway.
So you start off with your film with a drone shot. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's one of the, again, I want to say how good the production value of this film is. It's a very nice drone shot. You must have very nice high lenses. Was that always your plan to sort of ease the inches, like you're going up to the house? Like, something's going to happen, but you don't know. So we're going to show you a little bit of later, but we're going to get there later. So was that your plan? Because you're bringing some very eerie music around that. And then you kind of just stop. So I really don't know what you're leading. Like, you kind of just make the viewer think, what is going to happen next? Was that your plan?
Yes. You know, that was definitely our plan. And the DP and I had discussed drone shots from the very beginning. And what was great was when I met Niamh Sutherland, you know, I had seen his work, and I had reached out to him. And when we met, we were absolutely on the same page in terms of even our color palette. You know, we saw the same thing. And we decided drones to give a feeling of, you know, we were looking at a different waterfall because I wanted more of a sense of you know, I wanted the audience to really feel on the edge of their seat with the water. Like, it's quite frightening from going from above, but we couldn't, the waterfall that we got, because of the wind at the time, we couldn't get super close. And the waterfall that we picked was not our original waterfall. It worked out really well, but we wanted something that was even more kind of scary. Like, really, the height was even more intense, but we couldn't really afford it again. So we found a waterfall called Alexander Falls, and that was in Whistler. No relation to the Whistler, of course. But that waterfall was great because it was Crown land, and we didn't have to pay, which was kind of fantastic. But the wind was really intense, so a lot of those shots, we, you know, Niamh Sutherland knew a really great camera operator and has a top of lens, and he did the drone work, and he was very skilled. And there were times where it was very windy, and we wanted something really slow and long. So we were able to do that. But there was, you know, we picked the best of the best. There were a lot of shots that were just not smooth enough because of the winds, and that happened. So, but we were lucky to have such skilled filmmakers.
Now, I guess I discuss your lead actress and her sister. Do they spend time together? Because they actually seem to have that sister relationship. I do feel that happens. And I also want to throw in a second question here at the same time. When she reads the book, obviously you've made the book up. Now, who made the book up, and where does that come from?
Great. So in terms of the sisters, you know, Paris and Bea, they met during the reading, and that was it. And then they came on set, and we played around while we were setting up the camera, and just tried to feel out the blocking and what was the most natural for them. And they're just such good actresses that it was just natural for them, which was great. And, you know, Karis is such a natural actor. There's a lot going on internally. And Bea is so creative, and she just jumps in and has ideas, and really thoughtful. They're both very thoughtful actresses, so it worked out really well. And in terms of the book, I actually had a number of illustrators work on different styles for the book. I was looking, but it never felt that it was old enough. So actually what we did, and we were running out of time, we actually got our art director to do it herself. But what she did, she cut out different figures, and then she would put it into kind of a landscape, and then she would paint over it. So she cut little figures from the internet and put it together. And it worked out really well because we were running out of time, and it was exactly that, you know, late 1800s kind of style, as much as we could, or early 1900s. So, yeah, it was, she really made beautiful pieces, and I still have those pages because they're just so beautifully done.
So, that's awesome. I also want to discuss the home. Like, you have to have a certain home for this. And then I hopefully you looked at more than one house, because I do find this house is big for two people. So I'm wondering, where did you find your house?
That was definitely, I think, one of our more difficult, or more stressful, I think, for me. It was the most stressful sort of piece to our pre-production, because a lot of the houses we had, our location manager, Adam Wallaker, he was looking around for us, and he would take pictures of different houses because he's really knowledgeable about the area. He knows it very intimately. He's been there for a long time. So he would send me photos, and nothing looked right. And then he had a friend that ended up being our executive producer, and it was his parents' house. And we thought, well, this is perfect, because what we were looking for was a modern-looking home that was neutral enough for us to shoot in and not move the furniture around too much, you know, to hopefully keep it so we didn't have to bring in too many props. And also that there was a forest in the back. Now, there were trees. You know, you couldn't go really far because we shot when, you know, our character Lindsay runs out of the house and runs into the woods. She kind of stopped there. And then we went to Whistler to shoot the actual forest scene. But we were looking for something where it would be feasible to shoot her running out of the house into the woods. So it worked out beautifully.
Also, I want to discuss, and there would be something viewers had missed when they see the thing, is the yellow light out the window. No, I'm sure you didn't think that was color corrected later, would be my guess. Or no, did you do something not?
That was all. We tried to make everything as orange as possible. And so the light coming out of the window was a bit yellow, but we didn't want to change the inside lamp was too orange, so we had to play with that one. But basically, our GP, Naeem, and I were trying to just get blues and oranges as most of our color palette. So we really pushed in post to have those colors pop as much as possible. But there were a few things where we just couldn't do it because we already had a lot of orange in the frame on the inside. So anyway, yeah, that was intentional.
Okay, don't worry. We are going to get further on the film. As you can tell, I'm leading you along as we go. You have a scene, I would say numerous children, I'd say 12 to 15 children, walking through a forest. So I have no issues with that shot. I want to know, how are the parents both standing there watching their children walk through a forest with no shoes on? And I don't know how cold it was. We're going to get to that later because you know what scene that we're talking about the coldness in. So how was that as a director going, it's okay, we're going to be fine? Because you're shooting at night, obviously you've lit light, and I can see the light and stuff. So how did that feel directing all that?
The kids that were willing and able to do this were amazing because it was chilly. We had blankets. They had coats. They had their coats on until they had to shoot. The parents were really patient, but they knew what they were getting into. There was a lot of communication, and there has to be, when kids are involved. So the parents really knew what was happening. We put little pads inside the socks so they weren't walking completely barefoot or, just with the socks itself, because there were a lot of, the ground was not even. It was kind of muddy. So we wanted to protect them as much as we could while getting the best, shots we could, and the look that we were trying to get. They were really patient. I think the only thing I ever said was just to slow down, as if you're, zombies or you're possessed. So I think that was kind of the only comment. And there were a couple little girls, they said, hey, can we hold hands during this? And so I said, yeah, of course, so you can see that on the left while they're coming towards Karis, and they're kind of holding hands, which was cute. But they were really good sports.
Now, I guess my major, how long does it take you to shoot a scene like that? Because you've got to be a little impatient. I understand you want that shot you want, but, it's not adults. Adults get it. Kids want to go home. So what time did you start shooting, and what time did you finish shooting, and what did you feed them to calm them down?
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, we actually had them get ready in costume and makeup in Squamish. And there was a sports center where there was a big room that we could, dress them and put makeup on them, and where the parents could hang out with their kids, and there was a lot of space for that. And we did that, and that took a few hours. And then once we were ready, we called one of our production assistants, and they brought up the children, a few different cars. And then once, we were ready with the camera, then we would try to get them into the forest really quickly and try to get them out really quickly. But because the DP and I wanted to shoot during twilight, and that is really hard because we had no time. So we were lucky that day because it was cloudy, so we were able to get Karis in the forest running around, we could sort of make it look sort of twilight-ish for, the later part was when we actually shot the children. It was getting very dark, and we really didn't have time for everything. I had other shots planned and other things I wanted to do, but we could only get a couple. We basically got them coming towards Karis and then the drone shot. But it was enough. It was enough to show that. And the drone shot, we actually added twice as many children into the shot because we didn't have so many. We did have, I believe, 12 kids, but we wanted to make it look like there were more children, so we added some VFX and just copied and pasted and did that to make that effect.
So, as we're progressing, we're going to get to the big final scene, but I want to get there last. I also want to discuss when her sister wakes up in bed. I like how you guys even took the point to put dirt on the sheets and they put dirt in her socks, and I did look for that. Being a parent, the one thing I thought, she better have dirt in those socks. I'm going to call that out. So did you guys think about that ahead of time, or those are the socks you wore through the forest?
We definitely muddied those socks up because Bea never walked through the forest in her socks. We had shoes on because we kind of shot her from here up. So she was, but she didn't, or maybe she did wear socks actually. Anyway, I think she had pads on, but she didn't mind. She was up for anything. But we, I don't know where those socks went. But we definitely muddied up the socks that she wore in bed. And that particular scene we came up with while we were working on pre-production, because we wanted to have some kind of twist. And Bea was such a great little actress that I just wanted to feature her. We thought it would be great that this could have been a dream, you know, when Lindsay falls asleep and then she can't find her sister. But then we thought, but it'd be fun if we thought it were real. So then we added that scene, and she was such a, you know, in one take, she was ready. She was really creative with, oh, maybe if I wake up from a nightmare, you know, maybe I'll pull the blanket this way. And she really thought through her scene. It was fantastic. I didn't have to do anything. I'm like, great, let's shoot this. It's perfect.
So we're at a point that we find a woman lying in the creek.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the film twice. I kind of missed that the first time taking notes, but I do take a lot of notes during it. So I want to discuss, I always wanted to know, how cold was the water and how long did you make her lie there?
That's a great question. And, you know, our actress Karis was such a good sport, because what we did try to do was we thought of shooting in October, but we knew in Whistler it would be really cold, so we just kind of hurried up the production and, you know, pre-production and shot in late September, but it was still really cold. And the water was freezing. We actually have behind-the-scenes footage of Karis just trying to walk to the rock and then just lying down. And, the you know, poor thing, she was, there were some drone shots that we had where her body was just shivering. But she was such a good sport. And she's like, nope, I'm going to do this. And we tried to keep her clothes kind of as dry as possible by just, you know, having her hair wet and then maybe her pants. So we tried to keep her warm, but it was really chilly. So she was a great sport.
So I guess we finally should decide, which you know I've been waiting for the end, the look of the big reveal. And I got to say, this looks authentic again. Again, I want to go back to the production side of this film. It stunned me. I want to know how long this person had to spend in the makeup chair and how long you spent designing, like, even little things like eyebrows and wrinkles and ears and the general look. I mean, obviously, I think you have an artist painting or something they had to go by, but that looks like 3 to 5 hours in a makeup chair, I would argue.
That's 100% correct. We did have a proof of concept image that we had of his face, and, you know, we were thinking of this Puritan kind of, this priest in Puritan times that, or minister rather, that just became evil. And there's a whole kind of backstory to what he's about. But again, we didn't have a big budget. So we had to find someone. And we talked to a lot of makeup artists, and there were a few that were very talented, but they were asking too much for what they needed to do. And we thought, well, we don't have time to do a cast of his face. We don't have the money for it. So what we did is we found a really talented makeup artist that understood what we were trying to do, understood like we could spend as little as possible. And she bought like a fake nose, a bunch of latex pieces, and put it on his face. And then he was in the chair for, was it 3.5 hours for? Yeah, he was very patient and actually very funny. We have, you know, behind the scenes footage of him just, you know, messing around, you know, as the Whistler in makeup, and it's just hilarious.
Now, I really feel that this film is a vehicle to jump to a bigger film. I definitely think you have a part two in mind. I'm sure you've written it in your head if you've never put it on paper. And maybe this is your vehicle to go to a full-length film next. I think this is like the prologue, and then is that your plan?
Yes, that's exactly the plan. I actually have written a feature. It's on a draft where it still needs some work. But this was a really great, I was already working on the feature prior to shooting the short, and the short changed a lot, even in terms of concept. So I went back and I worked on the feature, and that's quite helpful. If you can do a short film and based on a feature you written or something you want to do, it's a great way to really, find the details and establish, exactly what you want to do and to clarify your vision.
So that's about it for the film. I'm going to head into fun questions. I hope that's okay with you. So if you can read my handwriting, which I'm sure you can because most people can't, since your first time on the show, and if you come back, you won't get the same questions, okay. I promise. What's your favorite film?
In terms of horror films?
Any film you want to talk about.
I love, it just came to mind. It's one of my top five. I love The Gift with Cate Blanchett. I think it's a beautiful film. It has frightening elements. It's a thriller, but it was beautifully told by, Billy Bob Thornton wrote it, and I think based on his mom and his experience there. And it was just, it's a remarkable little film.
Now, I do want to ask my next question. It's kind of fun. Being a filmmaker, I always feel you guys should see every film on the planet. So what's one film you've never seen and you should have?
I think there are probably very many. One film that I haven't seen, I should have. I'm trying to think. I'm sure there's a Scorsese film in there, for sure.
New York, New York.
Yep, there's one.
I always want to ask this question. When you go to the movie theater, do you have a go-to snack?
Ooh. I really do love popcorn. But I like to, switch it up between something sweet and something savory. So I always get, I'll either get like chocolate or something. I don't know. Sometimes I even like to have a tea.
Which you are having right now. Now, just because we're here in person, I'm going to have to ask this question just before we wrap up. Have you seen some films at this festival? I presume you're sitting there watching film and just gory and binging because it's kind of awesome because it's free and there are families to come here. What films have you seen? Have you said, maybe I should recommend these to other people?
There are a number of films. I think what Leslie Ann Coles has done, she has a really great eye for interesting pieces that make you think. There's a feature film called Murmur, and it's done in a documentary style. It's shot beautifully, and it's I would highly recommend seeing that. This could be wrong, but I believe it was at TIFF. And I can see why. It's really remarkable following this woman, and it's really tragic, but it feels so real. And it's just done beautifully. And you follow her journey taking care of all these animals and her reason for doing that. And it's just, I thought that was a really cool film.
Well, I want to thank you for coming here and meeting us. Well, just me. Nobody else comes ever. And good luck in your film, and thank you for coming.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
Great. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.